Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And so, as you know, while discussing a bipartisan immigration deal with several lawmakers in the Oval Office yesterday, President Trump characterized Haiti, El Salvador, and African countries as SH hole countries. Now, because we have listeners at this time of day with very small children, I'm going to adhere to our usual standard and choose not to say the full word, which others have been repeating. I'm not going to descend to the grotesque level the president reportedly did just because he did. This would be true whether this was an FCC prohibited word or not. We know it's been on the air earlier in the day on others of our programs. We should report quotes when they come from the president of the United States and not have to worry about the FCC coming down on us. But our standard at this time of day is people with very small children are hanging around in the middays and we're going to keep this family show. But let's be clear. The president reportedly called those countries SH holes, using the full word, and suggested that the U.S. bring in more immigrants from Norway or Asia instead, according to multiple sources talking to the Washington Post. The president tweeted this morning, sort of denying it and sort of not. The language used by me at the DACA meeting was tough, but this was not the language used. What? He said what was really tough was the outlandish proposal made, a big setback for DACA. And by that, he was talking about the bipartisan compromise that he so forcefully rejected. Dick Durbin, by the way, the only Democratic senator who was in that meeting, went on television this morning and affirmed, oh yeah, he said it. But so far, none of the and none of the Republican lawmakers who were there, Durbin was the only Democrat, none of the Republican lawmakers who were there have denied the president's comments were made. In fact, Congresswoman Mia Love, who's a Republican and a Haitian American, in fact, the first black Republican woman elected to the House, has called on the president to apologize for his remarks. You won't be surprised to learn that he has not. Most other Republican members have been silent, including Speaker Paul Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Now, this news comes amidst other developments on immigration this week. The context for the remark was that the president was forcefully denouncing the bipartisan proposal on DACA and border security brought to him by Senators Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham, despite saying he would accept whatever Congress comes up with. Remember that? All the way back to Tuesday in that televised White House meeting? Remember? All the way back to Tuesday?
I think my positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it because I respect them.
So much for that. In fact, this compromise even included the money that he wants this year for his wall, $1.6 billion, but that wasn't good enough. Now, the flip-flop, if I may, even confirms some of the worst of what was in Michael Wolff's new book about Trump World, that he doesn't understand the policies he's discussing, that he changes his tune after speaking to the last person to have his ear, even mentioning Norway as the counterexample. He had just met with the president of Norway the day before yesterday, so that country was top of mind. Coincidence? Short attention span? Valid to ask. And to Wolf's reporting that Trump watches cable TV a lot of the day rather than doing actual president work, there was a weird incident yesterday in which Trump tweeted against his own terrorism surveillance policy after seeing it criticized on Fox. I'm not making this up. Paul Ryan had to call him personally and explain, and then the president tweeted again with his original point of view. Very disturbing from a presidential stability and cognitive health standpoint, promising to go along with congressional compromises on immigration. In the televised meeting Tuesday, the clip we played was a way of refuting Michael Wolff's claim that he was not functioning normally. He went on TV with this negotiating session to show people that he could synthesize fairly complex information and function like a brain is working human being. But reverting to his mean in private yesterday and in vulgar terms, like Tuesday never happened, I guess shows what normal for him is. Now, for context, on the week in immigration, you know that 7-Eleven franchises across the country, including quite a few here in the New York area, have been targeted this week by ICE in a push to hold employers accountable for hiring undocumented workers. While yesterday here in New York, as we brought up with the mayor, immigration activist Ravi Ragbir was detained by ICE during a check-in, sparking a protest that led to the arrest of two city council members and many others. Joining us now to talk about these recent developments are Elise Damas, lawyer and director of the Pathways to Citizenship Program at the Central American Refugee Center on Long Island, and Gary Pierre Pierre, founder and editor of the Haitian Times. Welcome to WNYC, Elise.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And Gary, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. Pleasure.
And listeners, the president had his turn, so now is yours. Are you from Haiti or El Salvador or any of the countries the president referred to? If other people are calling up, we're going to respectfully bump you from the phones for now to give a chance at this unique and unpresidential moment for people who have roots in Haiti, El Salvador, or Africa, to call up and tell us how you would characterize the country you come from. And what do you make of the president's comments? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Gary, our listeners who generally consume a fair amount of news have no doubt been exposed before this to how the president's remark is being discussed in this country. How's it being discussed in the Haitian press?
Well, it's been discussed in the same way. I mean, first of all, let's get something out of the way. President Donald Trump is a racist. Once we get that out of the way, then we can understand it. We can no longer sugarcoat it that he has mental acuity problems and all of that. He may have those problems, but at the end of the day, he has a long history of racism. So that's why the community braced itself. We've been at his crosshairs for quite some time. So this is yet another example of where he stands. And now I'm calling on the good people who last year thought that they didn't have an alternative, they didn't have a choice, that this was the best. Now we know what we have, and it's time to move on. I mean, it is enough. We can no longer, every day, Brian, whether it's this, tomorrow will be something else, and we'll move on. And at some point, we have to come together as a nation and say, look, this leadership is not working. It's not serving the majority of the people. And really, that's what's going on in the Haitian press and in the press in Haiti. I mean, this is a bigger story. It's a big story in Haiti as well. Haiti today, by the way, Brian, marks the 8th-year anniversary of that devastating earthquake. And Haiti's reeling from that. Of course, Haiti has problems. But to categorize it like that shows a gross lack of understanding of history and the relationship between Haiti and the United States. Brian, you don't have enough hours for me to talk about those history and the ties that bind the two places. I mean, in many ways, American expansion began with the Haitian Revolution. And I'm not going to give your listeners history lessons, but, you know, we need to understand those basic facts. Also, that Haitian soldiers fought during the War of the American Independence. So the history goes back as long as America, you know, has been around. And so, you know, to have a really uninformed president say these things over and over and over, it's not just about the Haitians, it's about other issues. You know, you had a great intro to this piece where you really talk about the lack of knowledge, curiosity, you know, that, you know, we've never had anyone like this. And we have to think about this. In Latin America, there's a saying that says that a people elect a leader in their own image. Is Donald Trump our image? I'm talking now as an American, because that's what I am. I'm a Haitian American. Is that who we are as a nation? And people have to look at it. Put aside, you know, the hatred of Hillary Clinton. Now, she's gone. She's a private citizen. Now we have to look at where we are. And that's the question that I have for a lot of these people who thought that Donald Trump was an alternative. I mean, do you still believe that? Is that who you are? And that's the question that I have, Brian. I'm sorry for going on like that, but this is really too much.
I think it's what people needed to hear, and I think it's frankly cathartic for a lot of people to hear you just say it that directly. And Elise Domus, I'm going to give you a turn to do whatever you want to follow up on that. Do you think, for example, that when the president characterizes, it is not just the countries. He says, why do we need people from those countries with a lot of problems? If you want to put it in the most benign possible terms, countries with a lot of problems, which he calls SH hole countries. Why do we need people from those countries? Why don't we have more people from Norway? It reminds us that the immigration discussion might be wrapped in economics, but it is so much for Donald Trump and a lot of the people who elected Donald Trump about race and about just not wanting black and brown people to come into this country very much because a lot of the white people who voted for Donald Trump just don't want them here.
No, Gary was absolutely right by framing his comments in the context of racism. You know, the juxtaposition of Haiti and El Salvador to Norway, it's no coincidence, right? What is the most obvious stark difference between those countries? It's not really education level. It's not really safety. It's a matter of the difference in skin color and the difference in ethnicity between the Norwegian people and the people from countries like Haiti and El Salvador. So it is on its face an issue of racism. And I don't think it's hyperbole to say that there really are no words to describe absolutely how disturbing these comments are. You know, I applaud you for not using the word on air, and I frankly am perfectly happy to follow in your footsteps. I try every day to not say things that Donald Trump says, so this is just a great excuse to do just that. But this is a situation where you have people, as you said, people who are being characterized by the very poverty and the very instability and the very crime that they are seeking to escape.
Let's take a call. Chenny in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hello. Thank you so much for calling.
Brian, thank you for taking my call. I'm from Malawi originally. I'm an American citizen now. But many of us who come from Africa come here, become educated. I hold a doctorate. And we contribute to society. My hope is that the president will correct this, apologize for what he has said, and hopefully keep his sons out of those S-hole countries that they go hunting in. Stop doing that. I mean, this is ridiculous that he claimed that he has failed.
Chenny, thank you very much. I'm going to move on because your line is breaking up so badly, but I think you got to the point. James in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, James.
Thank you, Brian, for taking my call. I just want to say that the president is out of control. What the brother from 80 says, time is way past. I know the Republican people are desperate to keep their house, but we need to grow up. This is not how America should be sustained. I'm from the Ivory Coast, West Africa. When people from Africa come to America, we contribute tremendously to the economy of this country. Unfortunately, we are not the people speaking up when it comes to where we're from and how we can represent ourselves, because we put in a basket as African American. So we don't have a voice to defend ourselves. Even our leaders do not have that voice. But when the continent of Africa is stricken with poverty due to what we've been subject to by the so-called developed country that would prevent us from flying from our own, then we are seen as people that are not capable. Being black is not a curse. We never chose to be black. This is how we were born. So it does not make us idiot because we are from a country or a continent that is a colored continent. We would like our president to grow up, become a leader that he's supposed to be, the leader of the free world, instead of acting like a child from kindergarten. And I'm very much offended that being African does not make us less contributed to this economy. We build this country from our blood, our sweat. We've been here. We don't speak up. We've been mixed up as African-American. We don't say much. But to say that we're from whatever hole, that is very degrading, that's insulting, that's belittling, and that's totally disrespectful. And I'm sorry if I'm not, I can't even find my word, but this is very, very surprising for a leader of a free world to act like a child.
Harold, thank you so much for your call. And Gary, I want to bring up the responsibility of Republicans in Congress after the president characterizes countries, whole countries, and their people this way. And we haven't heard from Paul Ryan, at least as when we went on the air this morning at 10 o'clock. We haven't heard from Mitch McConnell. We haven't heard from Lindsey Graham. We haven't heard from Republicans who were in the room, along with the one Democrat, Senator Dick Durbin, who did go public this morning and said, yes, the president did call those countries SHO countries, and of course denounced it. And we haven't heard from Republicans denouncing this in strong terms and calling the president racist, or even at least saying the president said something racist. Remember, that's what Paul Ryan did back during one of the incidents during the campaign. There are so many I can't even remember. I think it had to do with Judge Curiel not being able to rule on a Trump-related case because he's Mexican, of Mexican descent, born in Indiana, and Trump is trying to block people from Mexico from coming into the country. Paul Ryan at least said that's a textbook example of a racist comment, though he stopped short of calling the president racist. I don't know how many individual comments have to add up before one makes a judgment about an individual. But here's an example from Morning Edition where a Republican congressman kind of sloughed off what the president said and tried to just reinterpret it into rational terms. And actually, as you'll hear at the beginning of this 40-second clip, actually blame the people who are accusing the president of racism for being as bad as the president for saying what he said about those countries. This is Republican Congressman Paul Gosar of Arizona.
When we start slinging the racial slurs, you know, I think that's a poor choice on both sides. I think we,
even though he said he would prefer immigrants from Norway, a predominantly white country.
But, you know, looking all the way across the board, you know, for immigrants coming to a country from very different statuses, you know, higher status living that are presented in Norway versus maybe what you would see in Haiti or in parts of Africa. And that's part of the rule of law.
Congressman Paul Gosar, Republican from Arizona, with NPR's Rachel Martin on Morning Edition. Gary Pierre-Pierre, founder of the Haitian Times here in New York. You want to react to that how it represents the Republican congressional response to this?
Well, I think, you know, frankly, I don't recognize the Republican Party anymore. I mean, I am not a Republican, to be sure, but I can understand their viewpoint. I don't understand them anymore. I think Donald Trump has hijacked the party. And because they see him as a toad where they can push whatever agenda they want, so they're willing to put up with anything. And this is really not right. It is not right. And beyond that, how do you, you know, an intelligent person go on a show like this on a national radio and make a fool of yourselves? You know, we need to start thinking about this. This is not partisan, and it's about human decency. I mean, as a person, how do you defend something like that? I mean, Paul Ryan, I'm sorry, he's not a serious person. I mean, I mean, we try to make him that because he's Speaker of the House, but his policies are not serious, and his social views are not. I'm sorry, I just cannot take these guys seriously. I mean, I'm on Twitter a lot, and I see a lot of Republicans are really, really up in the air about what their party has become. You know, they need to rescue the Republican Party and make it a party that, you know, is conservative. We can agree to disagree. But what we're seeing now is that it's a party that is frozen, that is in fear of anything. And it's almost going back to the other 800-pound gorilla, the Russia investigation. It raised a lot of questions because, remember, WikiLeaks, the Russians have Republicans' emails as well. And we don't know what's in these emails. And perhaps there are certain things there they don't want out. And placating Trump. They need to stop. Look in the mirror. Because if you look back during the Watergate, it was the Republicans who called on Richard Nixon. They were the ones who forced the issue. Because they realized their party was in peril. And that's what we need to see. We need to see leadership from the Republican Party. And it's missing. And it's not just on this, Brian. Every other, offensive things that this president has done, we've heard nothing. I mean, what is it going to take for the Republican Party to step up?
Elise Damas is our other guest. She's the director of the Pathways to Citizenship Program at the Central American Refugee Center in Long Island, and an attorney. And Elise, I wonder how you think. Well, let me give people a little behind the scenes fact here. We originally invited you on the show for today, yesterday afternoon, to talk about the ICE raids on 7-Elevens in the New York area, very much in New York City and on Long Island. And then this happened, which, of course, is an earthquake when the president of the United States uses such racist language to refer to whole countries. Do you see a connection?
Oh my gosh, the two are inextricably linked. The fact is that current ICE operations, current ICE actions are completely motivated by Trump's racist anti-immigrant agenda. You know, you look at previous workplace raids, like the 7-Eleven raids under prior administrations, and the focus had kind of been on punishing the employer. You know, for listeners who don't know, it's not actually in and of itself illegal to work without authorization in the United States, but it is illegal to hire an individual who is not authorized to work in the United States. So the focus in prior instances was on punishing the employer. If you look at the press that came out around the 7-Eleven raids this week, the focus has been on the immigrants, the 21 immigrants, right? So the punishment is for the person who is working, not for the person who is truly committing what could be an act punishable by law.
The employer.
Sure.
But by focusing on the employer, it's to stop the hiring of undocumented immigrants, which is to put pressure on immigrant communities not to try to come here or stay here and work. Right?
They're trying to put a chokehold on immigrant communities, right? If we suffocate you, if we cut off your ability to work, your ability to maintain yourselves and your families, we are going to, you know, essentially force you to either go back, self-deport, or to not come in the first place.
Do you think they raid 100 7-Elevens rather than something that isn't so iconic a brand name, because word gets around, and the point is to intimidate a lot more people than they're actually arresting?
I mean, what we saw after the 7-Eleven raids was that not only, were 21 people arrested, but people stopped going to 7-Eleven, right? So what you have is immigrants who stop participating in our economies. It's another way of putting fear into the communities. If you're asking me, 7-Elevens are franchise-owned, not business-owned, so I think that Trump's friends on Wall Street are not, personally being harmed by this, because they're not the franchise owner who owned these 98 7-Elevens. I think the choice of this brand in particular was probably pretty carefully calculated.
And on this, we'll have a lot of listeners, no doubt, who say the president characterizing whole countries and their people in the way that he did is one thing. But there's a more legitimate conversation here to have about undocumented immigration and the rule of law and the notion that while we're having this conversation nationally about what kinds of eventually comprehensive immigration reform to have, the country does have rules, the country does have laws, and if you're not here legally, you shouldn't be allowed to work. So enforcing that, including through raids that either sanction employers or pick up people who are working here illegally, is a legitimate thing and in another category from the president's racism.
Yeah, but it comes in the context of ICE unleashed, right? What we've seen during the past 12 months is an ICE that knows no bounds, an ICE that isn't complying by basic kind of human decency. You know, the tactics that we've seen from ICE when they execute these operations are completely void of all humanity. You know, I heard a case recently of ICE officers going to the home of an individual they were looking to pick up, and his girlfriend was on the other side of the door and chose to engage them in conversation. And she, loving her partner, did not want to turn him over to ICE. And ICE's response was, well, right now, we're just here for him. But if you don't open the door and let us in, we're going to be here for you too. Right? Like, that's the world that we're living in. And I think that we can't, you know, it's fine to talk about, you know, the legality involved in hiring undocumented immigrants, but it has to be viewed in the context of the broader situation.
This is WN... Gary, hang on 1 second. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. We're probably in enough trouble with the FCC for quoting the president this morning. We might as well at least do the legal ID on time. Gary, what did you want to say?
I wanted to add to what Ms. Damasa said, and it's not hyperbole. I think some of your listeners might think, okay, this is an exaggeration. But hear me out. The president says something that we're not focusing on. He says, get him out. And he has the power to do that. El Salvadorians, Haitians, the TPS recipients, what people don't know, the government knows their Social Security number. It knows where they work. It knows where they live. So rounding them up is easy for the government to do. And I think you asked me a question earlier about the reaction of the community. That's where we are. People have asked me, do you think he's going to round us up? And I said, well, I don't know, but he can. And yesterday he confirmed that he will. Round them up. Get him out of here. That's what he said. And we have to think of that. These people have been here for a while. They have families. So we're going to disrupt entire family to placate the base who doesn't like the black and brown people. So this is where we are today in America, the base. We hear that so often, and it's really sad.
And Elise, one of the other reasons you were originally going to come on today before the president made this remark, and then it turns out to be completely relevant to the remark that he made, relates to what Gary was just talking about, people who've been here a long time and have families here. Because when the president announced, or his administration announced, that they're going to rescind temporary protected status for 200,000 Salvadorans, I think a lot of people don't understand the history of that. Temporary protected status is only for people who are already in the country when the natural disaster or other event hits that country. And in this case, it was two earthquakes that hit El Salvador in 2001. So the 200,000 people who they want to suddenly expel from the United States by next year have been in this country since at least 2001, and most of them earlier than 2001. So those people have had children here, many American citizens. Families are so entrenched here legally with the protection of the American government through the Bush administration and through the Obama administration. And so what they are doing is uprooting these very established legal residents of the United States and saying, you 200,000 people with the implications, not just for yourselves, but your children who've been born here and everything else, you know, have to be taken into account. And then that's part of what Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin brought to the president yesterday that led him to say that remark and call El Salvador and other countries SH hole countries. The compromise, bipartisan compromise that they brought to the president, and folks, with all the focus on the word, this fact may have gotten lost, but this is an important policy piece of it. Part of the bipartisan compromise was to allow the Salvadorans to stay, to allow the Salvadorans, as well as the Haitians, who are also here, TPS, if they were here from 2010 and before, prior to the earthquake, right? And it was in that context, while offering the president funding for the wall, the first year funding for the wall, and also legalizing the DACA recipients, it was in that context that the president came out with that vulgarity. And Elise, you were originally coming on the show today before the president spoke, if we can call it speech, partly to talk about the Salvadorans on Long Island, where you work. So please do.
So it's not just Salvadorans. I mean, as Gary knows well, it also impacts Haitians, it impacts Hondurans, it impacts Nicaraguans, because those are four countries that have some for, you know, now approximately 20 years received temporary protected status. And you hit the nail on the head when you said this is something that has endured through both Republican and Democratic administrations. TPS has never been rescinded in the way that it is now by any president, any of Trump's predecessors. I think that what happened yesterday during the DACA meeting, Trump really showed his cards, right? His comment on Tuesday, well, you know, come to me with any proposal and I'll accept it. You know, your positions are my positions. But they're not, because as long as a position doesn't fit his racist agenda, as long as it's the brown people that we're trying to let in the country, that's not going to be his position. And for a place like Long Island, the implications are absolutely devastating. You know, on Long Island, we have the fifth largest Salvadoran community in the United States. And even though, speaking specifically about Salvadoran TPS, it's not actually going to cease to exist until September of next year, we're already seeing the shockwaves of it. Our office is being inundated by exactly the people that you were describing. We're talking single parents, we're talking business owners, people with minor U.S. citizen children who are having to have come face to face with the reality of being deported to a country in which they have spent no time as an adult, because the majority of Salvadoran TPS holders have been in the United States now for at least 20 years. A country that is absolutely plagued by violence. You know, you look at a place like Long Island, in the past 30 years, as our immigrant community has grown, our crime rate has actually decreased. But you look at a place like El Salvador, which is about the third of the size of New York City, there were 4 million murders there last year. Here in New York, we only had 290. This is not a place that you want to be deported to, and the implications for these people are absolutely devastating.
So I invited people to call in if they are from or have ancestral ties to the countries who the president referenced in that statement. So fair enough, one of those countries was Norway, from which he would rather have immigrants come. And here is Norwegian American Harold in Maplewood calling in. Harold, you're on WNYC. Hello. Let me try that again. That was my fault. Harold, now we got you. Hi.
Hi there. Good morning. Yeah, I was interested as a first-generation American. Both of my parents were born in Norway, and our family made the trek from Norway to America about 95 years ago. So I was very interested to hear that Norway got caught in the crosshairs this morning with the president's controversial remarks. And, you know, the president would like to see more immigrants from Norway, but Norwegians don't want to emigrate to the United States. I mean, why would they? Norwegians are enjoying a much higher standard of living and arguably a better quality of life. And in fact, since half of my family lives in Norway and both of my parents were born there, I'm currently in the process of trying to get my Norwegian citizenship.
Wow. So would you say that if the president really wanted us to be more like Norway rather than just opening the floodgates more to Norwegian immigrants, if he really wanted us to be more like Norway, that he should raise taxes to improve the social safety net?
You know what? When I look at how my relatives live and their quality of life, I might say that would be a way to go. But interesting, one other point I wanted to make, Norway doesn't have a president. It has a prime minister. And her name is Erna Solberg, who the president met with yesterday, I believe.
I mistakenly said president earlier. Go ahead.
But interestingly enough, her party is a center-right party that has aligned itself with an anti-immigration party in Norway. So there's ironies here on both sides of the Atlantic as it relates to immigration.
Thank you so much for your call. Namina in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Namina.
Hi, Laura. Good morning. I am your homeschool friend. I mean, that's his mother. I am really, really upset. I'm not surprised of what the president said.
Namina, give me one second. Because you identified yourself that way, some of our callers may know your daughter Is it Amina, your daughter?
Yeah. Mine is with an N.
Yes, Namina. Amina was a teenager. I don't know how old she is now.
Right. She's in college. She's a teenager now.
And she was being homeschooled. And
all her life.
Maybe you were using this program as part of her public affairs, social studies lessons. And she called in with such informed remarks and questions on so many issues over the last, I don't know, 5 years or so. Where is she now?
She is in Portland, Maine. She's an art student.
She's in college?
Yeah, she's in college.
Yay. You did it.
I did it. Thank you so much.
You raised a college student. So in all these years, I've never heard from you, her mother.
There's this African saying from where I came from, when your child is talking, you let them be who they are. So I kind of take that.
I love that.
I just listen and I learn as well.
I love that. So, to what do I owe the honor today?
Well, I am from Sierra Leone, West Africa, where the blood diamond happened for 10 years, and people take it, take and take. But apart from that, this president, I'm not surprised at all, because what he's doing is what he campaigned on. The thing that bothers me is that the Republicans are getting comfortable with his behavior and his presidency, and all these people that voted for him, these are things that they wanted. These are things that they did not like. And without brown and black people, you wouldn't have the so-called first world. You wouldn't have America. It was brown and black people that were here before, the original people, the Native Americans. So I'm not surprised at all. The sad thing is, when Sunday comes, these people take their Bible and they go to church. They go to church and they pray. And then you come out and you discriminate against people. These are people. These are somebody's mother. These are people's children. You know how many light white people that have black in them? They're hiding it. They're not saying it. You know, and it breaks my heart because I love this country. And this is where I have a daughter. And it breaks my heart and there's tears in my heart to hear this man. All these people that voted for him, Brian, they should take note and pay attention. Because this is not the United States of America that I wanted to come to. This is not it. And that's why I call for, and I want to thank you for encouraging my daughter, because I've learned so much. Thank you so much. And that's all I have to say.
But I
am upset.
Thank you so much, Namina. Best of luck to you and to Amina. And you know what? I don't think we can improve on that. So Namina is going to get the last word in this segment. I want to thank our guests, Elise Damas, lawyer and director of the Pathways to Citizenship Program at the Central American Refugee Center on Long Island, and Gary Pierre-Pierre, founder and editor of the Haitian Times here in New York. Thank you both very much. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.